Global stocks drop as the G7 doubles down on a warning that it's ready to impose harsh economic sanctions on Russia if it invades Ukraine. Live from London, this is the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service. I'm Victoria Craig. Good morning. We'll start with a check of the numbers. Brent crude briefly rose to $96 a barrel this morning. That's the highest level in more than 7 years. It's since come back down to trade near the $94 mark. Meanwhile, it's a sea of red across European stock markets this morning. Benchmarks in Paris, Frankfurt, and Milan are sinking more than 3%. London's FTSE 100 is down about 2%, while U.S. stock futures are down in the 0.8% to 1% range at this hour. This all comes after finance ministers from the G7 group of developed nations said this morning they view the Russian military buildup at Ukraine's borders as a cause for grave concern. Western leaders fear an invasion could happen any day, and they've reiterated such action would be met with a swift, coordinated, and forceful response. Though it's massed more than 100,000 troops at the Eastern European nation's border, Russia denies it's planning to invade. Germany's Chancellor Olaf Scholz is due to meet Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky in Kiev today before he travels to Moscow tomorrow for a face-to-face with President Vladimir Putin. Diplomatic efforts to defuse the tension continues, but the economic impact on Ukraine and those who live there is already becoming very real. Margarita Rymenko, who lives in Ukraine, told the BBC what the uncertainty means for ordinary citizens.
I think everyone is going through just like, do I have enough money just in case? If I need to leave the city urgently, what should I take? Should I like have my case prepared overnight? Or like how fast can I move out of the house if there will be an airstrike or where is the nearest bomb shelter? And there's very little information on that, unfortunately. I think in general, Ukrainians would expect a little bit more actual, clear communication from the West that we will not be abandoned in case something happens.
Well, the uncertainty hasn't just spooked those living inside Ukraine, but those who invest in it, too. And the specter of military conflict has already taken an economic toll on the country, as Olga Pyndyuk, an economist at the Vienna Institute for International Economic Studies, explains.
Investors, consumers are putting major investment decisions or purchases on hold. So the cost of borrowing became prohibitively high externally. It's basically not possible at the moment for the Ukrainian government to borrow any money. It has to rely on the international financial institutions for external financing sources. And national currency has devalued. The Ukrainian government is trying to minimize the panic that the economy will collapse even without military intervention.
Western countries have vowed harsh economic sanctions on Russia if it does invade Ukraine. And the German chancellor on Sunday told Ukraine it could count on Germany for solidarity, particularly when it comes to financial support. But I guess the question is, how much could it offset the damage that's already been done and even further damage that could be inflicted on the economy should Russia invade?
The EU has signaled support by announcing like some billion euros of macrofinancial assistance package and also some grants. Canada offered some money. I think the US will follow the suit. Of course, this is not enough. And if the military conflict does take place, Ukraine will need a lot of assistance in terms of not only military assistance, but also financial assistance. Otherwise, I'm afraid it won't be able to manage on their own the economy.
And what happens then?
We all remember still the aftermath of the 2014 events, Crimea annexation, beginning of the Donbas conflict, which was also instigated by Russia. Then it was a recession, deep recession for 2 years. The Ukrainian economy actually was surprisingly resilient given the shock it had to endure. So the economic growth became positive already 2 years after the onset of the conflict, but it has never been high enough for sustainable catching up with countries from Central Europe, which are the EU members. A recession can happen again, and Ukraine would need to readjust its economy to the new massive shocks it will be faced with. The 2014 events were, in a way, a blessing in disguise because they helped to restructure the economy in a more efficient way. The IT services now feature much more prominently in the economy. It's less dependent on the very inefficient metallurgy sector, but it's very painful. The cost for the population is going to be very high. So go through such changes evolutionary if it's possible.
Olga Pyndyuk from the Vienna Institute for International Economic Studies. Thanks for breaking this down for us this morning.
Thank you.
To Switzerland now, where voters have said no to big tobacco. In a weekend referendum, 57% of voters backed tighter restrictions on cigarette advertising. No longer will companies be able to advertise in newspapers, movie theaters, on the internet, at events, and on billboards. The BBC's Imogen Folks has more on that.
It's not so long ago that you could smoke in restaurants and bars. It took the Swiss much longer than, say, the UK or France or Germany to introduce that. Cigarettes are also, in comparison with what the Swiss earn, they're comparatively cheap. So young people can afford them more easily. And that is also a problem viewed here, that it's too accessible. We have Philip Morris in Geneva, British American Tobacco, just along the lake, and also Japan Tobacco. Cynics will say that's because the Swiss are lax with these laws. They're very business friendly. Corporation tax can be quite low. It came out during the campaign that a spokesman for Philip Morris actually admitted they were financing the No campaign. And they had a campaign where they said, ban tobacco advertising. It remains a legal product. You open the door to banning advertising for other legal products, maybe things with sugar, maybe things with alcohol, maybe even Switzerland's much loved sausages. But the voters just did not take this seriously.
That's the BBC's Imogen Folks reporting from Geneva there. Well, last week, protests against mandatory COVID-19 vaccination requirements in Canada spread to the Ambassador Bridge in Ontario. It's a vital trade link with the U.S. and the busiest border crossing between Canada and America. But after days of blockades that snarled traffic and stopped billions of dollars in trade, the BBC's Jessica Murphy reports the bridge reopened in the very early hours of this morning.
Police, really with a show of force, finally did move in and did manage to clear it peacefully. A lot of protesters, in fact, just decided with this show of police force to simply turn around and go home. Police did say there were 7 arrests. A few trucks were also seized as well, but they did say that they felt that it went peacefully and that they focused on negotiations with the protesters and really making clear that they're moving in and expecting them to move along. Between $300 and $400 million worth of trade cross on that bridge every day. The mayor of Windsor, which is on the Canadian side of the bridge, estimated that it had an impact of around $3 billion to the national economy. So you can understand why Canadian officials at all levels of government and even the White House weighed in saying it really needed to be opened up.
That's the BBC's Jessica Murphy reporting there. Finally, it may be Valentine's Day, but stopping off for a bouquet of fresh blooms isn't just reserved for this single day in mid-February. The global flower trade reached $125 billion last year, according to one estimate, with sales in the U.S. reaching record levels. Ordering ahead is becoming more common. Online purchases are expected to make up 30% of all sales by 2027. In London, I'm Victoria Craig with the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.